Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 25th, 2016. SPLM-IO leaders reject the nomination of Thabang Ndengai as the acting first vice president.
Well, the caveat in this process is that if and when Dr. Riak returns to Juba, Thabang will quit his post and give it back to Vice President Riek Machar. So that is what they are counting on, that it is not a coup, that it is simply a feeling of a vacuum.
And IDPs from Juba say they still don't feel safe to return home.
I lost everything in my house. Even right now, I have nothing to put on like clothing. So I've been helped by some of my colleagues. Some other people gave me shirts, other trousers. So I'm just gambling with the life.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some senior members of the SPLM in opposition nominated Thabang Ndengai over the weekend to act as the country's first vice president. Riek Machar's spokesman, Peter Gadet, condemned the nomination of Thabang Ndengai. Gadet issued a statement calling on the members of the IGAD Plus countries, the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, and other international bodies to reject Thabang's nomination. A South Sudanese analyst with the Juba-based SAD Institute says Thabang's nomination presents a challenge to the Kiir administration. Jock Madur Jock says troops loyal to Riek Machar are against the new development in the SPLM in opposition.
Now that they have not been able to establish the whereabouts of the first vice president, Dr. Riek Machar, and now that the IO, the opposition forces, at least the ones remaining in Juba, which is the majority of its political class, have decided to appoint Thabang Ndengai to become the acting vice president. But we would not be surprised either if the president does not issue this decree right away, because there are also other competing challenges, one of which is the fact that Thabang Ndengai is seen not to command a lot of support and control over the IO forces, ones who are here and ones who are everywhere else throughout the country. Another possibility that will cause the president to delay this appointment is the fact that Thabang also is one of people who were in competition in Unity State when he was governor, particularly the family of Moinkwil, who include some of the leading military generals in that area, including Dr. Moinkwil himself and Matthew Puljang, who are very close allies of President Kiir. And the appointment of Thabang Ndengai to become their chief and they become his subordinates might not bode well for the government of South Sudan under Salva Kiir. So yes, there might be an appointment anytime, but we would not also be surprised if that appointment is delayed.
And what about the party rules of SPLM-IO? My understanding is that anything to do with the hierarchy of the party or any decision-making in the party has to get the blessings of the members of the National Liberation Council and the Political Bureau. And the news that I'm getting from Juba that there were only 5 members of the National Liberation Council present at the meeting on Saturday where Thabang was nominated as the acting vice president.
Yes, you are correct. I think what the IO people in Juba have done was to bypass the rules and regulations of their party and instead chose to act on the basis of regulations that came in the agreement for the resolution of conflict in South Sudan, ASIS, which also calls for, that gives rights to the state and to all the parties to the agreement to fill positions as they become vacant for whatever reason. So they chose to act on the basis of the agreement and not on the basis of the regulations of their party.
What about the legal implication of this change? My understanding is that if the SPLM-IO group that were in Juba opted to go with the peace agreement and forget about their party rules, then it could be challenged on legal basis that the nomination of Taban Dengai was not done according to party rules and regulations.
Well, the caveat in this process is that if and when Dr. Riak returns to Juba, Taban will quit his post and give it back to Vice President Riek Machar. So that is what they are counting on, that it is not a coup, that it is simply a filling of a vacuum. And in the event that the first Vice President returns, Taban will exit. Now, of course, with that in mind, one would think that they are also counting on the fact that Riak is not here. So who is going to challenge this decision legally? Riak and his supporters are not here. So the only way they are going to be able to challenge this is to go to war, because they have no legal space for them to challenge this in a court of law.
A lot of people are asking this question: who is Taban Dengai? Can you tell us more about him? What kind of a leader is he? What does he have to take on this important position of the country's first vice president?
Well, Taban, like many of these political leaders, is a former liberation fighter, a very able and likable field commander since he was a young person at the beginning of the SPLA in the 80s. He rose in the ranks, and when the split happened in 1991 within the SPLA, he went with Riak and joined Riak in the 1997 Khartoum Peace Agreement, and even contested a parliamentary seat in Khartoum. But when the SPLM reunited, he came back, and the whole process that led to the independence of the country, I mean the ending of the war, saw him becoming the first post-war governor of Unity State. Somebody who was also revered and respected in his command of the affairs of the state. Like any politician, of course, he has people who don't like him, and there are lots of people who think that he got what it takes to lead a country. And so right now, those people who chose him at this minute are counting on his being the only person who has always challenged Riek Machar. So I think that is what gives him the credibility among his followers.
That's Jock Madud Jock, the director of the SAD Institute. He was speaking to me from Juba earlier today. We have some news just in. President Salva Kiir has issued a decree appointing Taban Dengai as the country's first vice president. South Sudan in Focus will bring you more details on this development in our tomorrow's show. The South Sudan National Security arrested and detained the editor of Al-Watan Daily newspaper this week for misinforming the public about a story on African Union troops allegedly heading to South Sudan. Michael Christopher Real was released this evening and is expected to be arraigned in court tomorrow. Tito Justin has the details for VOA from Juba.
This marks the second time journalist Michael Christopher has been arrested and detained by the government. In May, Christopher was detained for what the government calls defamation. Abraham Malek, chairman of South Sudanese Journalist Network, says Christopher was detained after publishing a story that said the first batch of African Union regional forces would be arriving in South Sudan today, as per the recent AU decision to send troops to the country to restore law and order following the recent fighting in Juba. Malek says the information was incorrect and that the reporter misquoted Information Minister Michael Makwe. He called it a translation mistake, adding that journalists should not be seen as enemies, but rather be treated like representatives of other institutions in the country because they are working to achieve peace in the country.
But sometimes they see that maybe journalists are enemy to the government, are enemy to the police, are an enemy to the national security, which is not true. We are South Sudanese. We are concerned about our security in South Sudan. We are concerned about peace. We are concerned about the healing and reconciliation in South Sudan.
Upon his release, Christopher admitted he made a mistake in his reporting and that Al-Watan newspaper called a press conference to apologize. Speaking in Arabic, he says he is ready to face the law. Malek calls on media houses in South Sudan to train reporters before they ascend to cover sensitive issues such as the AU vote to send troops to South Sudan. He also urged the South Sudan authorities to release other detained journalists facing arraignment hearings.
I'm calling the president, His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardi, to intervene in order to release our journalist Alfred Taban and also Michael Christopher Riel. Or we can take them, both of them, to the court, because this is the way, according to the constitution of South Sudan, that detention should not take more than 24 hours. So, and the person should be taken to the court. If has mistaken, that the court will see the procedures in justice.
Christopher is the second journalist detained by the South Sudan security forces this month. Alfred Taban was arrested after publishing an editorial critical of both President Kiir and Vice President Machar's leadership. Taban has not been released despite calls from both local and international media advocacy groups. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
Residents of Juba's Jebel Kujur suburb, displaced during this month's fighting in the town between forces loyal to President Kiir and first Vice President Riek Machar, say they will not return to their homes. They say they are afraid they will be injured or even killed by an exploded ordnance left behind after the fighting. Other residents say they won't go back because they are afraid fighting will break out again. Tito Justin has this report for VOA from Juba.
Deadly clashes occurred in the Jebel Kujur area between the forces loyal to President Kiir and the SPLM-IO troops. The vast majority of residents who reside near Machar's headquarters fled their homes and took refuge inside either UN camps or churches. Some turned to friends who live outside the area. Ayub Unyinda Clement is one of hundreds who fled Jebel Kujur and now lives with a friend at their home in Nyokron West suburb.
I lost everything in my house. Even right now, I have nothing to put on like clothing. So I've been helped by some of my colleagues. Some other people gave me shirts, other trousers. So I'm just gambling with the life. Right now, I'm just struggling to get money where I can, first of all, put myself safe.
Onyinda says last week he returned to his house to try to collect some of his belongings but found his house was heavily damaged during the fighting. He says he believes it is unsafe for him to live in Jebel Kujur again. Onyinda says SPLA soldiers now patrol the area but very few people have returned.
Our plan is just to shift away from that place because the place is not safe for us to go and stay in. Since the war broke in, there are a lot of things which happened there. There are some other bombs which did not explode. They are still there. So for us to go, just go and stay immediately like that, it's not safe for health.
Tiu Jane is a Ugandan national who was evacuated by the Ugandan army to her home district of Arua after the violence erupted. Speaking by phone from Arua, Jane says she enjoyed her life in Juba before the fighting erupted, but says she has not yet recovered from that traumatic experience of hearing heavy gunfire so close to home. Another Jebel Kujur resident, Wilson Hissen, says he fled the neighborhood when the fighting broke out and now lives with his relatives in Juba's Haijalaba suburb. Hissen says he does not plan to return to his house in Jebel Kujur.
I fear to go back. My next plan is to stay where there's a safe area within Juba. I will also go back when I realize that there's a tangible change or there's a change where I'm living. That's when I will go back to see that policemen are around or to see that the whole situation is calm.
Military officials say about 300 people died during the violence. Aid agencies say the fighting forced tens of thousands of people to flee their homes and take refuge in UN camps, church compounds, or in neighboring countries like Uganda. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, food prices continue to bite families in Juba. We'll have more on that story after this.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
Can get a hotel, go spend a weekend there, and then make sure I get myself a treat. Sometimes it's good for others to serve you too.
Definitely have to call for a celebration. Even if something small, you have to celebrate it with friends or family, something like that. They call it house party or something like that. Because going out for clubbing, other stuff is not allowed in our family. My father doesn't like that.
I just look back to God and thank Him. Yeah, that's how I reward myself. I just take all the reward back to God Himself too. Just thank Him. That's all I can do.
By celebrating with my parents, my father, my mother, and my sisters, with a lot of my friends.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Juba say food prices have shot up following the recent fighting between forces supporting President Salva Kiir and troops loyal to Riek Machar. Traders have increased prices because of the scarcity of foreign currency for importing food from neighboring countries, as well as insecurity along the major supply route linking Juba to East Africa. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Food prices in Juba have skyrocketed in the last 2 weeks because of the recent fighting and looting of markets in Juba town by armed soldiers. Frequent attacks by armed men on the Juba Nimle Road have discouraged the traders from importing goods, causing high price and a scarcity of basic foodstuffs in Juba. A 50-kilogram bag of maize, which used to cost 1,500 South Sudanese pounds before the fighting, now cost at least 2,600 South Sudanese pounds. Taji Selina is a small-scale retail trader who sells onions and granite paste in Juba's Jebel Market. After the fighting, Selina says she was forced to sell only granite paste because she cannot find any onion normally imported from Uganda. Before the fighting, Selina could buy a bucket of granites for 175 South Sudanese pounds. Now she says it cost 500 South Sudanese pounds.
Soon, these things will disappear out of Juba. What you can maybe get easily is this green things like dodo. At times you'll get it okay. But the rest of the things which come from outside, you cannot get them now easily.
Bread, which is consumed by most South Sudanese families, is another item that has become scarce and expensive. Some bakeries have remained closed since the fighting broke out on July 8th. Selina says the few bakeries that still sell bread have raised their prices.
Since the beginning of this war, it's not there now. Recently, if you will get it, you get that one is £5, and it's too light. That cannot even make someone survive. Before, we used to buy one at maybe one with £3.
Before the recent classes, bakeries in Juba sold 10 pieces of bread for 20 South Sudanese pounds. Now 10 pieces sell for £40. Tong Anyek Atak owns a bakery near the University of Juba. His bakery makes 5,000 pieces of bread a day. Anyek says he is not making a profit because prices for ingredients have skyrocketed too.
It's challenging. Of course, prices are rising in the market daily. So we're just trying, really. Before, prices were about 1,800 a couple weeks ago, but when the crisis happened of late, it jumped up to 2,600. So it's been almost a 50% increase.
Last week, South Sudan's Central Bank approved $7 million for food import from neighboring countries. Traders were expecting truckloads of food items in Juba over the weekend. The South Sudan Chamber of Commerce says the food will be sold directly to consumers and local retail traders at subsidized prices. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
In a new survey by polling firm IPSOS, two-thirds of Kenyans say they support their government's decision to close down the Dadaab refugee camps and send all Somali refugees back home. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi. The survey also says less than a third of Kenyans want their troops to remain in Somalia.
In recent months, the Kenyan government has stated repeatedly it intends to close the Dadaab refugee camp in northeastern Kenya. The sprawling camp hosts more than 300,000 refugees, mostly from Somalia. The United Nations has urged Kenya to reverse its decision, citing the difficulties Somalis will face if they are forced to return to an unstable country. But Ipsos research analyst Tom Wolf says Kenyans strongly support closing the Dadaab.
And of that 69% aware, the same percent, 69%, support it, that is two-thirds. And the highest support in the regions was 82% in central, but only about one-third, that is 36%, in northeastern.
According to the UN Refugee Agency, 500 to 1,000 refugees voluntarily return home every week, and more than 15,000 have crossed the border since December. The researchers also asked Kenyans how they felt about their soldiers' presence in Somalia. Kenyan forces are part of 22,000-person African Union force deployed in Somalia to support the government and fight Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. Wolf said 56% of Kenyans want their troops out of Somalia. He knows that more than a third, 38%, said the troops should be posted at the Kenya-Somalia border to prevent cross-border incursions by terrorists. Interior Ministry spokesman Wendan Joker tells VOA some Kenyans are not aware the significance of having Kenyan soldiers in Somalia.
Our troops are there to stabilize and to help enhance security in Somalia, so that also it will also help that when we get to repatriate refugees back there, they are going into a safe and secure part of the country. Those ones who are demanding the return of our troops, they may not realize the magnitude and the effect the role that our troops are playing as part of the AMISOM.
Centre for Risk Management in Africa Director George Musamali says the security problem is bigger than the refugees.
That is not the solution. The solution is pacifying Somalia. We are having another challenge now coming out of southern Sudan. So if we withdraw the KDF from Somalia without having pacified the country, then definitely we are going to have more severe security challenges. Because I don't think our border is too porous. I don't think we have the resources of having military camps all over along the Kenyan-Somali border.
Kenya hopes to close the Dadaab camp later this year. Al-Shabaab vows its attack on Kenyan territory will continue until the government withdraws its forces from Somalia. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A group of South Sudanese diaspora in the East Coast state of Virginia gathered in the capital of Richmond to celebrate diversity of their country through music. The participants say they want to reverse their native language and culture through songs and community gathering. Ayen Bior attended the event and has this report from Washington.
The music emanating from the stage inside the hotel was so loud that one could hear it from the parking lot, an audible invitation to a room full of enthusiastic South Sudanese dancing, singing, and laughing. All of them came to Richmond to hear Achok Bola Jok, a South Sudanese-Australian singer known in the diaspora for her catchy songs about unity, love of culture, and remembrances about life in her home country. The 28-year-old single mother of two says people might have come to sing and dance, but they also came to openly celebrate their united heritage.
Yeah, because we don't want to forget our culture. So I just encourage the young kid so they can learn that we have our hometown. Like, you know, if we say now we will forget about Sudan. So we will just, you know, we will be in Australia, America, but we don't need that. But although you feel there is something wrong in Sudan, you don't have to show it. That's why I just make it.
Bull says the most effective way to maintain togetherness for communities in the diaspora is to have joint community gatherings where people from different ethnic backgrounds eat together, dance together, and share laughs with each other. And when the children see the adults interact and embrace other backgrounds, Bull says the younger generation naturally learns to do the same. Apa Jo Deng, a parent and diaspora community member, says she could not agree more. She says the diaspora has a responsibility to lead by example, to teach peace and unity. She says she hopes the world will learn from her South Sudanese community in Richmond.
There's no individuality, you know, there's no tribes here and that tribes. You know, we are one South Sudanese. And if one thing can be taken away from Richmond, it's that we are big, one big family. And I think if other community practice that, you know, our country, you know, South Sudan will be such an awesome country.
Bull says that sense of community is what binds all South Sudanese. She says she has experienced it all over the world, but the community in Richmond holds a special place in her heart because of their determination to keep the culture alive.
You see now in America, they welcome you, like, you know, you guys are feel welcome. And it's not your homeland, you know. That is what we need. We need to welcome some different people to our city. What I need is unity so we can be one nation. So I don't want, you know, separating people.
Parents like Bull and Deng say for them it was important that speakers at the event speak in their native language, whether it be Dinka or Arabic. They say they want their children to take part in the songs and dancing. But the kids, like 10-year-old Nibble Dow, had other plans outside.
We want to play and have fun, but the adults say no. Who's with me, kids? If you're with me, say yeah. Yeah!
Dow says she knows that the situation in South Sudan is terrible. She says she remembers losing her aunt a few years ago. Dow never met her aunt, but she remembers how sad her parents were when they learned of her death. Dow says if it was not for the fighting, people in South Sudan would be able to recover from treatable diseases like malaria and cholera. She says she has one simple message to the leaders in South Sudan.
Tell the leaders there's nothing to fight about your foolish things, and join together in peace, because that's the right thing to do.
Her best friend, 10-year-old Amor Chan, agrees.
Well, it makes me feel sad because I want everyone to join in peace and harmony.
Bull says she wants to create music that resonates well with the young and old in the South Sudanese diaspora. She says she wants to influence the young generation, like she has in Richmond, to echo the messages of peace and unity. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Some top members of the SPLM in opposition nominated Taban Deng Gai over the weekend to act as the country's first vice president, while Riek Machar is no longer in Juba. Machar spokesman Peter Gadet condemned the nomination of Taban Deng Gai. Gadet issued a statement calling on the members of the IGAD Plus countries, the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, and other bodies to reject Taban's nomination. A South Sudanese analyst with the Juba-based Sud Institute says Taban's nomination presents a challenge to the Kiir administration. Jock Madut Jock says troops who are loyal to Machar oppose the new development in the SPLM in opposition. Residents of Juba's Jebel Kajur suburb, displaced during this month's fighting in Juba between forces who back President Kiir and those loyal to Machar, say they'll not return to their homes anytime soon. They're afraid they'll be injured or even killed by unexploded ordnance left behind by the fighting. Other residents say they won't go back because they're afraid fighting will break out again. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Shane Shane by Emmanuel Kembe.
Of the innocent blood cries out with heartrending insistence in the heart of the person who killed. If you want peace, work for justice and for the heads of the states and political leaders must not sacrifice the lives of their fellow citizens. Shame, shame. This song tells about the actual war situation in South Sudan.
Shame, shame, shame. Shame, shame, mama. Shame, shame. Shame, shame, shame. Shame, shame, mama. Shame, shame.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Shen Shen. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.